89.3 4CRB.
And a very good morning to you. It's John Fradgley from the Bell Legal Group back with you for a program of The Law and You this Tuesday morning. As always, your opportunity to get free legal advice between now and 10 o'clock. All we ask you to do is get on that telephone as soon as you possibly can. The number, of course, is 5520 8888. That number again, 5520 8888. And if you live south of the Tweed River, don't forget you need to put 07 in front of the number. Otherwise, you'll get straight through and talk about people who are quick out of the blocks this morning. We have four callers already, and we say a very good morning to Greta. G'day, Greta. How are you today?
I'm good, thank you.
How can we help?
I'm the sole owner of a property, an apartment, and I want to know if it's possible to add another person's name to the title to make it joint tenants, or can it be classed as a gift? Must an actual sale take place?
Well, there will certainly be stamp duty payable in transferring a share. And if you do it as joint tenants, then that means that it must be an equal share. So you would have to transfer half of the property to the other person. Greta, the one thing you need to be aware of is that you, as I say, you will pay stamp duty on that. If the person is going to move into the property with you, then there will be a concessional rate of stamp duty because it would be their principal place of residence. Is the person that you're thinking of transferring it to, is that your spouse or partner?
No.
Right, okay. All right, so because if it was your spouse or your partner, it could in fact be stamp duty exempt if they were going to move into the property with you. So they're just a few things to bear in mind. The other thing, though, that you need to be aware of is, are you on the pension?
No.
Okay, right, because if you were on the pension, then transferring a half share of the property to someone would be classified as a gift, so you would be classified as divesting yourself of a half interest in the property, and that very well may affect your pension if you were on the pension. So for people who were in that situation, obviously the thing to do before you embarked upon anything of this nature would be to check with Centrelink to see what the implications of the pension might be. The other thing that you just need to bear in mind too, Greta, though, is that in transferring a half share of that property to someone, when they become the owner of a share of your property, they then are also entitled to force the sale of the property. So if you had a falling out with this person and they decided they wanted their half out of the unit, then they would be legally entitled to require the sale of the property and to force the sale by an application to the court if you refuse to agree to the sale. So there's just a few things there that you should carefully consider before going down that road. But otherwise, there's certainly no legal impediment to doing it.
Oh, that's a help. Thank you very much.
Okay, Greta, all the very best.
Thank you.
And the time on 4CRB is just coming up to 24 minutes to 10. 5520 8888, the number. The Law and You is the program, and we say good morning to Joyce. G'day, Joyce. How are you today?
Good morning, John. Yes.
How can I help?
About wills.
Sure.
I've just had a new one made, and the list of beneficiaries, it just gives their names, no address or relationship.
Right.
Is that usual now?
Look, it's not detrimental. Normally, addresses aren't put in wills because the addresses can quite often change, so it's advisable for you to keep a list. Some people, we would normally put that they were a relation, so we would put down, for example, to my nephew or whatever. But quite in modern legal parlance, quite often names are not, relationships are not put in, as long as the person is clearly identifiable. So as long as the names are correct and complete. So for example, if the person's name is William John Smith, that it doesn't say Bill Smith, because that could be anyone. So as long as the names are complete, and I would probably advise you just to leave a list somewhere in your documentation if you're concerned about the relationship, just to say who they are. But it certainly doesn't impact the enforceability of the will at all.
Right, that's good. Thanks very much, John.
Okay,
thank
Joyce,
you.
All the very best.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
And the time on 4CRB, it just keeps rolling along, coming up to 22 and a half minutes to 10. As we say, a very good morning to David. Good morning, David. How are you today?
Morning, John. Just a small problem with regard to a mortgage.
Sure.
And a payout.
Sure.
A property was purchased, a country property, using the local solicitor.
Yep.
Wonderful reputation.
Yep.
And the mortgage was arranged through a mortgage lender,
mm-hmm.
the biggest in Australia,
mm-hmm.
with the bank,
mm-hmm.
the biggest bank in Australia.
Mm-hmm.
Because my spouse, who predeceased me, made the paper arrangements, it was left unchecked.
Right.
I now find with the sale of the property
mm-hmm.
that the mortgage debt is greater than
right.
it started with in the first place,
right.
even though it was a fixed term, fixed interest loan.
Mm-hmm.
I made inquiries through the mortgage broker, who referred me to an officer in Brisbane, an officer representing the bank.
Mm.
The bank referred me to a solicitor.
Mm-hmm.
I then went, of their choice, I then went back to the original solicitor, who's a wonderful guy with a great reputation,
mm.
and he said his settlement was given on the basis of figures provided by the bank.
Mm.
There's not a lot of money, but it's mm. over 20 and under 30
yep.
thousand.
Yep.
And I'm running around in circles. Is this a job for the financial ombudsman?
Look, it may be, but David, what I suspect, I think you mentioned that it was for a fixed term at a fixed interest rate. Yeah, what the problem may be is that they have what are referred to as break costs. So if you have a fixed interest rate and you pay the mortgage out earlier than the term, then the financier will impose what are called break costs, because they claim, and I'm yet to get to the bottom of this, they claim that they enter into a fixed term interest arrangement with someone for funds. So they might, for example, have borrowed funds off another lender at a fixed rate to lend to you. But now when the interest rate drops from, say, when you borrowed the money, the interest rate was 8% and the interest rate is now 5%, there's a 3% differential, and therefore they will charge that interest on the principal for the balance of the term to make up what they refer to as the break costs. So that might be the explanation, but certainly you could go to the financial ombudsman. Do you have their number?
Yep.
Okay, well, if you give them a call.
Just to add to your comment about
yep.
the term. The first term expired
yep.
and the loan was renewed
right.
By me in the absence of my spouse.
Right.
I directed the bank at the time
mm-hmm.
through the broker.
Mm-hmm.
that the term must be again fixed
mm-hmm.
and the interest rate fixed, but I would not pay any amount for breaking the term of the loan,
because mm.
it was short-term.
Mm.
That's, what you know, like a couple of years.
Right.
And they agreed with that.
Right.
And they included it in their letter of confirmation of loan extension.
Oh, right, okay. Well, if you've got that in writing, if they have charged you break costs, then that's definitely not correct. So take the matter up with the financial ombudsman.
Good. Well, I can just say to your listeners,
mm.
if they've got any problems like this, the financial ombudsman is an absolute pearler.
Yes.
And I had a problem with a bank
mm.
over an amount owing on an insurance deal. And I took it up with them, and the bank gave them, the insurance company off the bank gave them the runaround for about 2 months.
Yes.
And they eventually came to a wonderful conclusion.
Excellent.
Full of apologies and compensation.
Yes. Well, the other thing, of course, to bear in mind is that the financial ombudsman does also cover insurance, as your comments
well,
there just demonstrate.
An insurance policy
yes.
taken
yes.
through the bank. Yes.
Okay,
thanks, John.
Okay, David, all the very best.
Thank you. Bye.
And the time continues to roll along. It's just coming up to 18 minutes to 10. 5520 8888 is the number. The Law and You is the program. Legal advice is available. Free legal advice, your opportunity to get it. All you need to do is get on the telephone, just like George. G'day, George. How are you today?
Hello. Yes,
George, how are you?
Oh, g'day, John. John, earlier this year, I was the first several callers you had concerning the NBN, you
mm-hmm.
may remember.
Right.
And I got a huge bill to start with when they told me it was all free and all that sort of stuff.
Yep.
Now, since then, that's going back now, I think, about January.
Right.
Since then, I've had several threatening letters.
Right.
The amount keeps changing.
Right.
It went from 360 to 92, then it went to 82, then it went to 176. But all that aside, the letters I'm getting are not now from NBN or Telstra. They're from the Melbourne Law Courts.
Right.
Do I have anything? I'm determined not to pay this.
Yeah.
And what could possibly be the implications if I don't?
Well, it sounds to me, if you've got a letter from the Law Court, it sounds to me like you may have received a letter advising that NBN have got a judgment against you. Is that what the letter is suggesting?
I don't know, John. The letterheads are from the law. It's got Melbourne Law Courts, and I just have a quick read through them.
Hmm.
The threats are in big, bold letters.
Yep.
You must pay this.
Yep.
And I've just been... I'm still angry at them, and I just rip them up.
Well, that's not a very wise thing to do. I'm sorry, George. So which part of the Gold Coast do you live? Which end of the coast?
I'm on the northern end.
At the northern end, right. What I would suggest you do, do you have any of the correspondence still? Or
no, I don't.
You've ripped it all up.
I don't. I'm sorry. I know it wasn't a wise thing to do, but
yes.
That's just the way I've been feeling.
Yes, no, so no, look, I fully understand that, George, so don't take it as a criticism. But what you need to do, though, is if you have any correspondence at all from the Melbourne courts, you would be well advised to take that in to the Citizens Advice Bureau in Southport. You could ring them and make an appointment to see them, but whatever you do, do not ignore correspondence from a court, because it normally means that someone's issued proceedings against you, and it very well may mean there's a claim. And if you don't put a defence in relation to that claim, then the plaintiff can get judgment by default against you, and then they can start enforcing the judgment against you. So it is very unwise to ignore things of that nature. So what I would suggest you do is it's probably going to be a bit difficult for you to get anything out of the courts unless you have a file number or something of that nature. So it is going to be a bit difficult. But the only thing I could suggest would be to give the Citizens Advice Bureau a call and see whether they might be able to assist you in getting some information out of the court.
Okay, look, I'm pretty sure I'll get another one of these letters.
I've got no doubt you will.
Because each time I get one, they extend the time limit to pay. They keep giving me, you know, another 14 days and another 14 days.
Yep.
They keep doing that. So I'm assuming I'll get one more. So hopefully I'll keep that one.
All right. Well, when you get it, have you got a pen handy?
Yes, I have.
Okay, so take down this telephone number if you would.
Yes.
Okay, so the number is 5532.
5532 9611.
That's the number for the Citizens Advice Bureau in Southport. They're in Railway Street, Southport. Ring them up and make an appointment to go in and see them when you get that next piece of correspondence, because you definitely do not want to be ignoring correspondence from the court. All right, then.
I thought they were the debt collector.
No, they definitely, well, if they're impersonating a court, they're in serious trouble. So definitely get some advice on it. All right, then.
Yeah. Okay, thanks.
Okay,
thanks.
George, all the very best. And the time on 4CRB has just passed 14 minutes to 10. We're coming up to the last 10 minutes of the program, so please don't leave those calls until we get into that last 10 minutes, where invariably we do get a rush. 5520888 is the number. That number again, 5520888. As we say, a very good morning to June. G'day, June. How are you today?
Oh, good morning, John. Thank you for taking the call.
No trouble.
Regarding fences?
Fences.
Fences.
Yep.
I've been in my Southern Golden Coast home for 30-plus years. When I came, there were no fences on the left side or the rear. And about 10 years ago, there were vicious dogs in the tenanted place next door on the left side. So we paid for a wire fence. That was the cheapest option to go along the left side and across the rear to keep away these dogs from getting in. They were doing and attacking us. So we paid for that and erected that wire fence at the rear and the left side. Now, the new owners at the rear, well, they've been owners for about 4 years, but it's been tenanted all that time. But they're now there doing the garden and everything. And they want to erect another fence in the place of my wire fence at the rear. Now, the wire fence is quite satisfactory. It's done its for the last roughly 10 years. I'm in my 80s now. I don't need the hassle. I don't need another fence, and I don't want unwanted expense.
No.
How do I... Well, I mean, I've already told the lady who came around one day that I wasn't interested in the fencing, but since then, a gentleman has dropped off three quotes. I didn't speak. He just left them here. So... I want to say I don't need another fence.
Yes.
I don't want expense. Yep. What do I do?
What I would suggest you do is, have you got a name of the person who dropped off the letters, or is there an address for you to contact them?
The quotes are in their name. The quotes are in the name.
Okay. What I would suggest you do is simply write back a letter and say that the fence that is there is quite satisfactory. It is not in need of repair. The fence is satisfactory to you. You don't agree to pay any of the cost of a new fence. And if they want a new fence, then it will be at their cost. That, you know, they can put a fence on the inside of the existing fence, on their side of the existing fence if they want. But I would simply reply and say, don't worry about that. Just say, look, the existing fence is quite adequate and satisfactory. It is not in need of repair, and I don't agree, to pay the cost of a new fence. They'll then have to go to the Queensland Civil and Administrative Tribunal, or QCAT, to have the matter resolved if they want to take it further. So they'll then have two options. They'll either pay for the fence themselves, in which case they should erect it on their side, not interfere with the existing fence. They could ask you if you would agree to, at their cost, if they take down the existing fence and replace it, and it's up to you to agree whether you'll agree to that. But you should make it very clear that under no circumstances do you agree to a new fence, nor will you pay the cost of a new, part of the cost of the new fence.
If they take it to court, what happens?
I think it's probably likely that the magistrate or the member of the tribunal, because in the tribunal they're members, not magistrates. Yes. I'm pretty sure the member would say, "Well, look, the fence that's there is adequate. It is not in need of repair. If you want a new fence, it's your cost." So, if it does get to that point, take some photographs and take them into the court to show that the fence is quite satisfactory. All right.
Now, would I have to pay costs if it was awarded to them?
No, there won't be. QCAT don't make orders for costs, so the proceedings are free. But if for some reason the member said, look, the fence is not adequate and needs to be replaced, and makes an order that you pay some proportion of the cost, then unfortunately you would have to. But I think on what you've outlined to me, June, I find it highly unlikely that that's going to happen.
Okay, so I write this letter first.
Just write back and say, thank you for the quotes. I don't accept any of them. I don't believe that there is any need for a new fence. The existing fence is in good repair and not in need of replacement.
All right, okay. Well, thank you so much.
Okay, June, and all the very best.
Thank you. Bye.
And the time on 4CRB is just past 9 minutes to 10. The Law on You, 5520888, the number, and we say a very good morning to Paul. G'day, Paul. How are you today?
Hello there.
How are you, Paul?
Not too bad there, thanks.
How can I help?
Probate in New South Wales.
Yes.
How long is a long time to be waiting for that to go through?
It shouldn't take that long. From memory, I think you've obviously got to advertise first, so there's an advertising period. I think from memory New South Wales it's the same as Queensland, 14 days. You need to get the death certificate first, so you can't apply until you have the death certificate. And then you need to fill out the probate application and the supporting affidavit, which annexes a copy of the will to it. And I think from memory you might normally expect the probate to issue in about 4 to 6 weeks.
Okay. It's been 2 years this June since old Pop passed, and we've been waiting on the settlement of his will.
Who's looking after it?
Our solicitor in a regional town in New South Wales.
Right. Well, look, and you've obviously been in touch with the firm, and what are they saying is the reason for delay?
Well, he needs this paper and that paper, and you send him the paper, and
What I would suggest you do is contact the New South Wales. Contact the New South Wales Law Society. I've got a number here for them if you'd like that number.
Yeah, I've got that number. Yeah.
Okay, so the area code, of course, is 02, and then the number is 9926.
9926.
0333. 0333. What you could do would be to write a letter to the solicitor or send an email if you can communicate by email and just say that the delay of 2 years is totally unacceptable and that unless he confirms that probate has been obtained, has been applied for within 14 days and confirms that probate has been issued within, say, 2 months, that you're going to refer the matter to the Law Society. You could do that first, or you could simply ring the Law Society and speak to them about it.
Yeah. And my mother-in-law is the executor of the will, and he virtually told her to show up and listen to him. Well, it was here in the office, but...
Well, it sounds to me like it might be a call to the Law Society. That's totally unacceptable for that to have been done.
Yes.
All right, then.
We'll do that then. Thanks,
okay, Paul. All the very best for that. And the time is coming up for just past 6 minutes to 10 right here on 4CRB, and this will probably be our last caller for this morning as we say a very good morning to Rosemary. G'day, Rosemary. How are you?
Hello.
Yes, how are you, Rosemary?
I'm very good, thank you.
That's good.
Just two questions. How does one go about setting up a power of attorney? My husband and I are both pensioners, and we want to set up a power of attorney.
Right. Okay. Are you in Queensland or New South Wales?
I'm on the Gold Coast.
Right. Okay. Well, it is possible to purchase a form or download a form online as long as you feel competent to fill it out.
That's what I was looking for, actually. Mm.
Right. Okay. Well, I think it's on the Justice Department website. Or the other option would be to give a solicitor a call and make an appointment and go and see a solicitor to have the documents done up, because there are a few issues that you would need to cover off, particularly if it's for you and your husband, and things such as conflict transactions, which are not covered by the standard form of power of attorney.
Okay.
So sometimes I think it's... you can sometimes, be a penny wise and a pound foolish in doing it yourself rather than getting a solicitor to do it.
Okay, we went to see somebody on the weekend. He wants to charge $400.
Right. Was that for each document or for the two?
Just for the power of attorney.
But one for each of you.
Oh, do you have to set up one for each of us?
Yes, both of you need to have one each.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so so if they're talking about $400 to do the two powers of attorney, that's probably not too bad, but you want to make sure that it's going to cover off on conflict transactions. There are also other issues surrounding superannuation that may need to be covered by the power of attorney document as well. So, if you're simply going to get a power of attorney but these other issues are not going to be considered as part of it, it's not really going to be of any greater benefit than if you did it yourself. All right.
Okay. The other question is to do with a will.
Yes.
Now, when I lived in New South Wales, we've just moved to Queensland.
Mm-hmm. Congratulations.
thank you. I love it here. And we had a will set up, but the will had something to do with, it's got my old house on it.
You mean the old address? Or
old your... address.
Okay, that doesn't matter. So
doesn't
if you have
matter.
A, if you have a will that says your address is 7 Smith Street, Burleigh Heads, and you now live at 9 Jones Street, Mudribar, makes mm-hmm. no difference at all. In fact, if your will said you live at 7 Smith Street, Tweed Heads, and you now live at 9 Jones Street, Mudribar, makes no difference at all
to
the enforceability
news.
Of the will. As long as
okay.
the will was originally properly prepared
yes,
and still adequately covers everything that you want, then there's no need to make a new will just because you've moved into Queensland.
Okay. And the other thing is, say, if with the power of attorney, and then my husband and I lose our mind and then we can't make decisions anymore.
Yep.
Can we appoint my daughter to make decisions for us?
Yes, you can.
Okay.
You can appoint whoever you like under a power of attorney, except you cannot appoint a paid healthcare provider. So that is one of the exclusions. So someone who is a paid carer or a paid healthcare provider can't be appointed.
No.
And you
okay.
obviously can't appoint someone for financial affairs if they're bankrupt either.
All right. No, that's okay.
No, right.
It's just a worry with, you know, my husband's going to go for a full body checkup tomorrow.
Right.
And we just want to make sure everything's in place.
Yes. No, well, I would definitely be getting, yes. Well, the big thing about powers of attorney is making sure you get them done while you still have capacity, because the standard of capacity required for a power of attorney is higher than the standard of mental capacity required for a will. So, because it's a much more powerful document, a power of attorney, than a will.
But it dies with you, doesn't it?
Yes, it does die with you, but think about the fact that whoever holds your power of attorney will make decisions when you no longer have capacity. So it comes down to that little bumper sticker on the back of cars, you know, that often say, always be nice to your kids because one day they'll choose your nursing home. So, you know, under the power of attorney, they might make a decision to put you into a nursing home that you would never have gone into in a pink fit while you had capacity yourself. So it is a powerful document.
Thank you very, very much. You've been more than helpful.
Okay, Rosemary, all the very best.
Thank you. Bye.
Well, thank you to all the people who've called in this morning and made for such an interesting program. Certainly many and varied calls. We did have a caller who rang last week in relation to some advice that I gave to Gwen about the road accident where she was hit, and about whether you could go to QCAT. I'll speak about that next week. But until we meet again, as always, this is John Fradgley saying goodbye and God bless.